He had returned to his ancestral chateau, which he had not seen since he was a small boy, believing that it was at least habitable. Now, as he looked at it, he thought he had undertaken an impossible task. Besides which, he did not have the money to do very much to it, or the estate. The Marquis's career would have filled a book of adventure and excitement. His family was one of the oldest in France, and prided itself on being one of the ancien régime. They had been part of the greatness of France for generations, and respected in every part of the country. When the revolution had broken out with the storming of the Bastille in 1789, the reigning Marquis and his wife could not at first believe that the revolution would affect them in any way. Then the guillotine was set up in Paris. A number of their friends met their deaths, and they realized that it was dangerous for them to remain in France. The Marquis had travelled a great deal, and so had his wife. They decided, after some thought, to seek sanctuary in England until the revolution was over. They were not the only aristocrats who were fleeing from their country, and they were welcomed in London by a number of their friends. The young Prince of Wales went out of his way to entertain them, and expressed most sincerely his horror over what was happening in France. The Marquis and his wife had been married for some years, but without family. To their surprise and delight, in 1792, 3 years after they had left France, a son was born to them. They called him Jean-Pierre, after his grandfather. He was brought up with the other émigrés in London and amongst many English aristocrats. The Marquis had almost the experience and prestige of a diplomat. As he had lived in England both before and after his marriage, he had made a great number of friends. They not only welcomed him on his arrival, but extended their hospitality to Jean-Pierre as he grew older, and he was, in fact, a very happy and intelligent little boy. Jean-Pierre attended a school in London, where he became very popular, and he took home numerous reports which his parents found most. They talked of sending him to Eton, where a number of his friends were studying, and began discussions with the headmaster about the possibility of him becoming a pupil at that distinguished school. He was too young to be troubled with what was happening in France, but his father and mother were extremely worried when a Corsican called Napoleon Bonaparte took over the army in 1796. Before most people in England realized what was happening, all of Europe was being threatened. Napoleon's troops, in spite of hunger, despondency, and lack of equipment, had been inspired by their leader's own dazzling faith and vitality. Having been part of the revolution, Napoleon now managed to heal the wounds of France like a genius. He gave new hope for the future. 2 years after Napoleon had taken over the country on the verge of collapse, he had defeated all her enemies, with the exception of Britain, and restored France's natural unity. He then brought in new and surprising laws, amongst which was the suspension of the law against the émigrés. He invited hundreds and thousands of exiles to come home. In doing so, he conciliated the important families of the aristocracy who had survived the guillotine. Yet, although Napoleon was working for a restitution of the country, he parted with none of the unique powers gained by the revolution, and he used the goodwill of the church and the émigrés to widen them. Those who had returned from exile received only a fraction of their lands back, and none of their feudal rights were restored, although at least something was saved and handed back to them after they thought that they had lost everything. Jean-Pierre was too young to realize what a tremendous problem this situation presented to his family. Every instinct in his father and mother told them they should grasp the chance of returning to their native land, as they longed for the possessions they had owned before the revolution. On the other hand, they were obliged to ask themselves whether they could trust this upstart Corsican, who had made himself so powerful in such an unbelievably short time. The Marquis de Castellon was a most intelligent man, and he was more impressed than most people by the material benefits which Napoleon's strong rule had secured for his country. It was his victories and astonishing genius which guaranteed his hold over France. By the spring of 1802, his popularity had risen even higher. Victorious peace on the continent was now crowned by peace with England. It marked the end of